This is the happiness quotient. For a free PDF download of A Course in Happiness, go to patreon.com/thehappinessquotient, where you'll find a beautiful, colorful new issue. Print it out, share it, post it on your refrigerator. Everybody who participates gets an A+. Hey, and that ain't bad.
All of my wisdom came from all the toughest days. I never learned a thing being happy. All of my suffering came, I didn't appreciate it. I never learned a thing being happy. But to know how it feels now. Happiness Jones.
Welcome to the Happiness Quotient. I'm Tom Pollard. Thank you for being here. In a previous lifetime, I was a television reporter for an NBC affiliate in Western Massachusetts. It was WWLP Channel 22. We called it the Double Deuce, fondly. And I was hired initially as a features reporter, wherein I'd produce, shoot, and edit my own stories for a series that I called In Touch with Western Massachusetts. As the features reporter on In Touch with Western Massachusetts, I was literally free to do whatever the hell I wanted. I'd always try to find some local angle when an international or national music act came to the regions. And so, case in point, I got to go do a story on Roy Orbison, who came to Northampton, Massachusetts. And my cameraman and I, Billy Kachachik, who is a great guy who I've stayed in touch with all these years. And we went to the story and got an interview with Roy in his bus. And so we went up into the bus, and all these people were trying to get his autographs and everything. And we go in the bus, sit down on the Roy Orbison's bus, who used to tour with the Beatles. To me, that was his great legend. Like, toured with the Beatles? Whoa! And so we sit down and do this really cool interview. Then we went in and filmed. Probably only had about a half an hour of the concert, and we had to fly back to the station and to get it for the news that night. And but in the interview, Roy, during one of the answers, he started out by going, "Well, let me tell you, Tommy." And I was like, oh my God. So I made Bill edit that into the story of Roy saying, "Let me tell you, Tommy," into the story just for proof. So that was one of my first experiences, tastes of meeting someone that the world knew about. And what I'm going to bring you today is a really, really amazing interview with a very well-known, the late legendary musician, multi-instrumentalist, Grammy Award-winning, multi-WC Handy Award winner, Clarence Gatemouth Brown. The late Clarence Gatemouth Brown, whom I'm going to share an interview with today, was born in 1924. I met him in 1988 in Massachusetts at what many would say is the peak of his career. He showed an early proclivity at an immense amount of talent at the age of 21 when the famed guitarist T-Bone Walker fell sick and dropped his guitar on stage in the middle of a tune. Gate leaped onto the stage, picked up T-Bone Walker's guitar, and ripped one of his own tunes called Gatemouth Boogie. T-Bone was not very happy about it, but the legend has it that fans threw at his feet $600 in tips. Now, back in the 1940s, that's no small feat. Gatemouth Brown, who I had the distinct pleasure and honor of meeting and getting to know a little bit, I'm going to share what I have with you today. And for those of you who might not be fans of so-called blues music, Gate Mouth was one of my first musicians that I fell in love with in that relative genre. But as you're going to find out with this interview, which I am showing on a YouTube version of this episode so you can see him, I was schooled big time by Gate Mouth, who was very, very kind to this fairly innocent green reporter who probably, I have to say, like we talked about color, black and white, and the blues, and how he did not like being referred to as a blues musician, and you're going to hear about that today. But so the cool thing is with Gate Mouth, and this shows you the how far ago this was. I contacted his manager, his confidant manager, kind of record producer, this guy by the name of Jim Bateman, who I had the pleasure of meeting about 20 years later in Memphis, Tennessee at the Blues Awards. And Jim said, yeah, you can do it. You can go interview Gate Mouth before the show at his hotel and then go to the show that night on the condition that you don't record full songs, just chunks of songs. Only bring one tape for the concert. I was like, oh man. So anyway, I acquiesced, of course, because I get to go interview this guy that I was completely mad for, who I learned about on a radio show called Jazz a la Mode on the Blue Monday edition of Jazz a la Mode, brought to you by this amazing DJ, legend in his own right, Tom Reaney, who is still today on WFCR radio in Amherst, Massachusetts, one of the great public radio stations of my life, at least, FCR 5 College Radio. And I learned a lot about the blues and jazz with Tom Reaney as my, if you will, my entertainer and wisdom of all things music. And so thanks to Tom Reaney for introducing me to Clarence Getmount Brown, who I got to know. And this is the first time I'm going to bring you today my interview with Gate Mouth, but I got to go to many events with him in the New England area and spent time talking to him. And so I go to interview Gate Mouth at the Red Roof Inn in South Deerfield, Massachusetts, and we did the interview, and the only place that it wasn't really busy was the swimming pool area, and there was nobody swimming in there. It was like 11 or 12 during the day, you know, and so we went in there, and you're going to hear the kind of the sound of, you can tell that we're in a swimming pool, and the sound, if you're only listening to this, of Gate Mouth is he's constantly lighting his pipe and puffing on his pipe. And the cool part is that Gate Mouth, he literally did school me on so many things. And you're going to hear this guy who's not very talented. Maybe I'm still not, but at the time, I certainly didn't know a lot about a 20-minute sit-down interview. And so we did the interview, went to the show that night, and I'm going to follow the interview right with the show in its entirety with his band, and but in the tape's entirety. So we only brought one 20-minute tape. Now, let me show you what a 3/4-inch tape looks like. This is a 3/4-inch tape, but this is a 30-minute one. The 20-minute cassettes were smaller. They were like, you know, this big. And so we had 20 minutes of tape to go film Gate Mouth. So we get to the show. I think I was with Bill Pococha for some reason. I was going to plug in to the soundboard to get good sound, and he was helping get me set up, even though I took the camera away and went right up, as you'll see in the concert, how I get right up next to his Gibson Firebird guitar, his legendary, iconic Gibson Firebird. And we go in, and he recognizes us, and he goes, get right up front. And in no time, we run out of 20 minutes of tape, and the show had basically just begun. I was like, oh shit. So we went back, we literally rolled back in time and re-recorded over parts of the concert. Every time it got good, we'd roll back and record over, and we kept getting up to go, and Gate Mouth's like, get back here. He wanted us to film the whole thing. Anyway, those are the troubles of the times. Now you just put an SD card and it lasts for, you could record for hours as long as the battery doesn't die. And back in those days, batteries went about 10 minutes. So Here's my interview with the legendary, the late, great Clarence Gatemouth Brown. And I'm going to leave it unfiltered, unedited, so you can hear really kind of my nascent stage of learning how to interview people. He was so good to me, so kind. And for those of you who aren't watching this and just listening to this one, right after we got the interview set up, he turned literally sideways to me just so he could be more comfortable puffing on his pipe. Pretty cool stuff. Here is my interview with Clarence Gatemouth Brown in 1988 at the Red Roof Inn in South Deerfield, Massachusetts.
Check. What my story is about, kind of directly or indirectly as it may be, is a lot about blues in a local sense, in a way, in the fact that we have some local clubs that have blues musicians come in and out. But in a lot of ways, that's what's keeping, I think, blues going in a way. That's what to me is so appealing about it, is those kind of those nightclub settings where folks like yourself go around and allow us to go down and almost get on a personal level, personal basis with you. It's not like big concert halls, but we get to see a little closer. Do you think that's the case countrywide a little?
Well, let's put it this way. The first thing, I don't play that type of blues. Mm-hmm. So, not that I can't, but I don't. You see, what happened to people get the wrong conception of blues. They think blues got to be Delta or Chicago, and that's wrong. Blues can be music of any form, depending on the phrasing. But what I look at in music is being positive in it rather than negative.
You do have your own particular brand of music. Even the way that you actually play the guitar is unique, the way you kind of pluck it with your fingers more than just using one pick. That seems to be your philosophy a little bit, to do something a little different than your basic blues, I suppose.
Well, completely different, like night and day, because I don't sound like the whining guitar, crying guitar. Mm-hmm. I try to make my instrument have a statement, but like they do have a statement too, but mine have a statement of being positive. Even the music's positive. And it's not nothing, I'm asking you for help. I don't do that. I'm writing a book on it, explaining more what's the difference between music and blues, straight blues. Mm-hmm. Straight blues is a disaster. Look what happened the other day.
What's that?
This boy hung himself.
Is that right?
Sure. See, a bad message can make you do some terrible things, man.
Yeah.
Especially if you're already down in the dumps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So blues to you isn't just a title for a strain of music. You try to, you think that is kind of fundamental, like it makes you blue, I suppose, in a way, to just listen to it as well.
Well, the kind of blues that the public refer to is a very hard downer. It's like going down to the pits of hell, and I suppose, and trying to claw your way out through hate. I don't see it.
Yeah. How come you have such a positive attitude? Anything that gives you inspiration? Is it just that you've kind of been given a gift of being positive, or what is it?
Well, a man have brains. He can think either way he wants. He can be evil with it, or he can be loving with it. Put it this way, he can be. It's just something, man. It's hard to explain. It's hard to explain what the inner feeling is like. If you hate yourself, that's what you're going to do. Hardcore blues, a hardcore country, a hard rock, a hard anything. I don't like nothing negative. I don't care what type of music. It don't have to be blues. But if you notice, blues is more visible than anything else. That and hard rock. Well, you can tell it if you know what you're looking for. And all of it is a disaster. all the hardcore blues players have come to a dead end, you know that.
Yeah. What would you call your type of blues? Is there a name for it?
Yes, my type of music, to say.
Yeah.
Yes, sorry. American and world music, Texas drive and swing.
That's great. Well, I'll tell you, it certainly gets people to listen because I know in this area, I know a lot of people who know who you are and have been listening to you for a while. I guess mistakenly they say he's a blues guitar player, but
well, all. A Negro musician plays a guitar, the white labels him as a blues player, and that's one category I don't want to be in. Mm. You either a blues player, a jazz player, a funk player, and you're not in between another, any of it. You're that, yeah. And I'm not that.
Now your daughter travels around with you, I guess, in the summer, or is this all year?
In the summer.
Yeah.
She's in school now.
Oh, she's got to go back, huh? Yeah.
I've flown back. I've flown back last Monday.
Great. You're from Louisiana.
I live in Louisiana. Uh-huh. I'm from Louisiana and Texas, yeah, but I live in Louisiana, right?
Mm-hmm. How many years or months of the year do you travel?
Oh, let's say about 200 days out of a year.
Exactly. You still love it like ever, huh?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit about your background. Who are some of the people who influenced you? Was it necessarily guitar playing, or was it just music? You just love music?
Music. But I've been more to horn lines, horn, big bands, because I try my best to play as near a big band as I can rather than sounding like a guitar with that same 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, that same stuff. I couldn't stand it. Mm-hmm.
Any particular artists that come to mind, or you?
Not really. See, don't forget I'm a fiddle player. I know. Maya Sharuth was country and Cajun and bluegrass.
So did you start by playing the fiddle first?
Guitar. We're playing country and stuff on it. Because my dad played it, see.
How old are you?
Right now, I'm 64.
You're playing music that's turning. I mean, you know what's so neat about that is music is forever. I mean, like, there are a lot of young artists out there who are playing music and everything, but it doesn't matter how old you are, because people still listen, and you're inspiring a lot of people. When I was at the show a couple weeks back in Sayre, there were a lot of young kids there, and they were just loving it, and that's...
The world, oh, yeah. I just was asked to go to Japan for a month. I was in New York last night, and this Japanese promoter wanted me to go back and be my third trip to Japan, so my office were talking to him today, we'll see.
That should be fun. You've been there
work.
Before, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you won a couple of Emmys in the past, I guess?
Grammy, got a nominated for two. Several W.C. Handy Awards. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, in January, in Port Arthur, Texas, my home planet, they're going to unveil a bronze bus on me.
Is that right? Whereabouts?
Port Arthur.
Uh-huh.
And sometime in January.
Holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
For your dedication and commitment to the music world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Texas, right. Janis Joplin's going to be on the same thing, I think.
Really?
Yeah, of course, she's not here to enjoy it, you know, but...
Yeah. Now, for someone perhaps who's an aspiring musician, guitar, whether it be fiddle or saxophone or whatever, what like yourself, should perhaps they do? Just keep on playing and listening to good music?
Try to be creative instead of... try to be creative instead of being... a person who copy everything they hear, you know. It's all right to do other people's stuff, but not try to be them. It's a lot of people have died trying to be others. That's what I'm telling you about that hardcore music period.
Be yourself.
And create stuff on your own. Use other people's stuff for identification, sure. Use other people's music, but do not try to be this other person, because you'll find yourself at a brick wall.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Now, tonight, how can I go about videotaping you? What are my limits? Or
just come on in and video. Your limitation is to give me a copy.
Okay.
Great. VHS, that's it.
Great.
And do not sell it. You can use it to let the people know what's what. Okay. Just don't sell it.
Now, you're with Real Records now?
Well, I'm affiliated with them. I'm not with any company as of right now.
Okay, so you're just a
I will be.
Musician of your own. Oh, you will be. But that's not necessarily important right now.
That's a management problem. I don't...
yeah, because I know there's a record store in Northampton called Dynamite Records, and they've got... I look through there and I see, I look for Clarence Gate Mouth Brown, and they got a lot of your records in there. So what I'll do is I'll mention that. I'll say, you know, go, if you want to look for his albums, because there's some stores I go to, they're starting to put more of your type of music, like, and I was going to say blues, but that's...
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah. but they are starting to kind of expand from the rock and roll a little more, and that's, and I see your name more and more often. You know?
Last night, I'm very strange. And as we were riding, I was talking to my members in my outfit about it. I said, you notice when we play music, everybody get real calm, get real respectful, and they listen. And they listening to understand what I'm doing. But the other band come on, they're not listening to nothing. They're jumping up and down, jumping all over tables and screaming and hollering and acting real crazy. You see the kind of music you play, you got a way of leading the people either on a good side or on a bad side.
You're looking for the good side.
I do focus on the good side. Yeah, it was funny.
That's great. Yeah, that's an interesting observation. You're exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a blues player really is not respected. Because I think the white making fun of the blues, as they might put it, like them poor guys out of Mississippi. These guys, white guys, put on the worst clothes they can find and look the worst they can, get up there and play the what they call the blues. Note for note, make the same mistake that these guys have made. I mean, you know, I don't think much of that.
Yeah.
Repeating yourself over and over and over and over all night.
You think that blues musicians have been, when I say blues, I mean literally what we know or call them.
What do you, if you had to listen to music, and I'm sure you're a blues lover, as you say, what's your impression of the blues?
Well, now that you pointed it out, most of them are about, like, I lost my woman.
You see what I mean?
Drinking out of the
very, bottle. Yeah, you see, that's very disrespectful.
Mm.
Because I couldn't say you a junkie. I wouldn't dare say you a pill head. I couldn't do that because many of the white musicians or people in the media have been caught and using heavy, heavy drugs, but I wouldn't dare say you do that until you show me.
Yeah. That's interesting.
That's right.
Because I think you're right. I think the blues music is kind of depressing.
It is.
It's a beautiful
sound. Listen to them, to the message. The message got a lot to do. You don't have to sing it. Listen to the way the music's played. If it's chanting all night, the same old 1, 2, 3, chanting all night, and everything they play the same thing. I heard the same tune 20 times last night.
Hmm. But just different words, different drum beats.
Yeah, and screaming and hollering.
Yeah, I tell you, that's one of the things. I go out, I used to go to concerts all the time when I was a little younger in high school. I used to like those bands that would just like hammer away, and now I go on. I find myself extremely disappointed almost all the time now.
Exactly. Because, and it all started from these English rock and rollers.
Mm-hmm.
They kept these poor, destitute blues players out of Mississippi. You notice, I know one went down in Mississippi and laid down there with all them people. Them real losers, poverty people, I mean, I don't put music in that category. Them people who did that stuff, they were doing it because they were really pushed into being depressed. Mm-hmm. I'm not being depressed, period. I try to help people instead of harming them. I don't want people to follow me and say, oh, poor guy, they treated you bad. See, what I can see in what I'm writing in my book is that these kind of artists, if you can call them artists, is putting that burden on the shoulders of the world. You don't need that because you didn't come to hear music to be depressed, no. Well, you come to hear music to straighten your life out if possible. And that's what I see wrong. And I'll always see it wrong. If I never get any place, I mean, I'm just honest about it.
Huh. Yeah. All right. Nice talking to you.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
So here we are now at Sheehan's Cafe in Northampton, Massachusetts. That very evening from the interview with Clarence Gatemouth Brown, we're set up right in front. And as you continue to watch this footage, you'll see I took the camera right off the tripod and sidled down right next to Gatemouth, where my camera literally tapped occasionally on the headstock of his Gibson Firebird. Iconic Gibson Firebird guitar. Enjoy.
I don't know how much you know about Gatemouth Brown. He started recording back January 1st in 1947. Well, since then, he's taken his music to every single corner of the world. He's nominated for 3 different Grammys, and he was awarded one of them. There's a pretty good reason for that. He's a 6-time winner of the W.C. Handy Blues Awards, and that includes instrumentalist as well as entertainer of the year for 1982, 83, 84, 85, 86, and 87. But it's 1988, and he's got to do it all over again tonight. I think he's up to it. Welcome to the stage, the one and only Clarence Gatemouth Brown.
Thank you. That's the humanoid from different planets. I'm assuming you left your container for one thing to be entertained.
By someone from another planet, so you have it. And the kind of music you'll hear tonight, we started on it, American and world music, Texas Drive and Swing. Now let's go back in time a bit and do one of the late and great Duke Ellington's tunes. It happened to be on one of my albums entitled Take an A-Train. Thank you.
Now I have a message song for you, to those who might want to listen. If you don't want to, you did, you wish you had it. This is going to be on my new album. It's called Dope. Our people.
Thank you.
amazing stuff. Clarence Gatemouth Brown. Gatemouth's band that night was Lloyd Herman on drums, Luther Womble on guitar, an amazing backup guitar player, and Harold Floyd on bass and doing the introductions and the weave-throughs with his vocal chords. In 2004, Gatemouth was diagnosed with lung cancer, and it severely hampered his touring schedule, obviously. It really impacted him greatly. And in August of 2005, for those who lived in the South, they're all too familiar with Hurricane Katrina, which devastated much of Louisiana. And Gate lived on Lake Pontchartrain in Slidell, Louisiana at the time. And knowing that Hurricane Katrina was coming, he basically evacuated and went to his brother's house over in East Texas to, if you will, escape the hurricane, which he did. But during that time that he was at his brother's, not necessarily exactly during Hurricane Katrina, Gatemouth passed. He lost his life to a battle with lung cancer. And as legend goes, his house was destroyed and all his guitars disappeared somewhere in the hurricane of the water and the flooding. And I have to find out if this is absolute truth, but I had heard or learned from someone in the industry that sometime after his Gibson Firebird guitar was found neck down into the mud with the body sticking up off kind of in the distance from his house. So with all hope, his Gibson Firebird does exist, and hopefully it's with one of his family members and or in a museum where people can go admire it from a man who was an incredible, brilliant guitar player, multi-instrumentalist, and a great vocalist as well, Clarence Gatemouth Brown. If you'd like a free downloadable PDF of the Happiness Quotients, A Course in Happiness, visit me at patreon.com/thehappinessquotient, where you'll see a PDF. And if you want, you can go to my website, eyesopenproductions.com/happiness, for the same, A Course in Happiness. And go there also, eyesopenproductions.com, if you want to inquire about personal coaching or public speaking, whether in person or online. And you also can join my mailing list, tom.dharma.pollard@gmail.com. Please share this episode with anyone and everyone that might find these words inspiring. I rely on the kindness of my listeners to share and distribute the episodes. This is to inspire people, to get people off their chair, going after their dreams. Remember, something bright always awaits us. Set one's mind straight with good intent. And even though the search can be dark and deep, something bright does await us, even in the tragedy that is life. Thank you to the Wood Brothers for the use of their song, Happiness Jones. Thank you for visiting the Happiness Quotient. I will see you all real soon. Happy, 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 happy.